Two Sundays ago in the sermon I gave to wrap up our social justice workshop weekend, I noticed that one of the ministers that I admired and looked up to when I was a seminarian was the Reverend William Sloan Coffin, who was at that time the chaplain during my seminary days. He was a chaplain at Yale University. Reverend Coffin combined a real feel for people and their personal and spiritual needs with the strongly prophetic stances he took in the civil rights and peace movements of the late 1960s and early 70s. I recounted in that sermon some of the things he said to us as young and aspiring ministers about the need to combine the pastoral and the social justice aspects of ministry when he paid a call at the seminary I attended 40 years ago. So I had to catch my breath a bit this past Thursday morning when I picked up the New York Times and read that Bill Coffin had died at age 81. His obituary filled nearly a whole page of that paper, as it told of his full and often controversial life. William Sloan Coffin, to share just a piece of that life, was born to a New York family of wealth and prestige, with all of the social and political connections that go with that station in life. He was too young for service in the Second World War. He served actually in the CIA for a time in the years immediately following that conflict, due in some part to his aversion to his concern with Stalinist totalitarianism and the threat that it posed. And then he pursued the liberal Protestant ministry after that. So he knew how to operate in circles of power and privilege while also ministering to and speaking out for those who use the term the least of these. He could handle himself with grace and conviction and humor equally well in the halls of Congress or in speaking before a rally for peace or social justice. Bill Coffin's ability to speak truth to power landed him in both the White House and the jailhouse on different occasions, and he knew how to minister well in both places. So I found it a little eerie that a person I saw as embodying some of the very best aspects of Protestant Christianity and of the liberal ministry died during the Christian Holy Week, when the themes of death and resurrection come most strongly to the fore. And I found myself wondering how Bill Coffin felt when he took the measure of his life and of the times in which his life came to an end. The man who strove so hard to bring a religious and moral voice of opposition to the Vietnam War lived to see the country he loved so much and served so well succumb yet again to the folly of another senseless war. The man who worked so diligently for racial justice did live to see some of the gains for which he fought, while also living to see some of the racial tensions and conflicts that continue to bedevil us. A man who strove so devotedly to bridge the gap between the have and the haves not lived to see that gap still very firmly in place. Did he feel, I wonder, despair at the end of his life? Did he feel it was all for naught? Well, in the admittedly little bit of personal contact I had with this gentleman, he always came across as a hopeful, cheerful, good-hearted, and good-humored kind of a guy. He loved it, in fact, when Gary Trudeau used him as a partial prototype for his Reverend Scott Sloan character in the Doonesbury comic strip. Gary Trudeau was at Yale while Bill Coffin was their chaplain. And so I doubt that he gave in to despair. Well, I found myself then spending part of this past Maundy Thursday reflecting and meditating on Reverend Coffin's remarkable life. And I tried to figure out, I tried to divine, you know, what kind of message he might have left persons like myself who admired him and were inspired by him. And I even got something back. It wasn't that I started hearing voices in my head, but I kind of imagined what I thought he would say, which were just very simple words to this effect. Okay, friends, I gave this my best shot. You're going to have to take it from here. My life is done. But you still have yours, so keep the faith and keep the message. And in the few few moments that those thoughts went through my head, I found myself feeling rather sad over how we still are from some of the ideals that inspired me through people like Mr. Coffin as I prepared for the ministry, to getting a sense of hope and renewal that such ideals are still worth striving in. It was like recalling or being called back to some of the reasons that I chose this career and calling in the first place. And I wonder, we can never really know, but I still wonder, if this was the kind of thing that Jesus' followers went through after his death, same kind of thing that Reverend Earl Holt spoke to very well, Joyce used for our words for reflection. But you read those Jesus stories in the New Testament, you can see how his followers had every good reason to think their lives had come up terribly short. Jesus' vision and the wisdom behind it that they were trying to help him spread ended up with their leader being executed in a most horrific way, and it left the disciples scared and running away and hiding out. And who could blame them? They probably figured they were next on Rome's hit list. I think Peter was only acting human when he said that he didn't know Jesus after he had been executed. Well, whatever came next, is shrouded in legend and myth. But at some point, the disciples came to believe that the spirit of their leader was still amongst them, that his message of hope and liberation had not died, and they had been given yet another chance to carry that message forth. What Jesus' life had been about, as I spoke to last Sunday, called them back to who they were and what they could still be and what they could still do. And eventually they got over their fear and uncertainty and despair, and they chose life again. They experienced, that is to say, a resurrection in their own lives, which later came to be told as the resurrection of the one whom they had been following. And this, in fact, is the human dynamic of the human experience that is behind the Easter legend. That death occurs and new life emerges out of it. This is a very ancient promise, actually. It was celebrated, as I shared with the children, this time of year, well before either the Easter or the Passover stories came to be told or observed. The earliest human beings who lived in this hemisphere celebrated the return of life, receiving the dead earth as winter gave way to spring. It does continue to intrigue me how we still set the date for Easter based on those earthly pagan celebrations. It's observed on the, if you can figure this out, the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox. That's what this Sunday is, in case you were wondering. And I'm sure I had to learn this somewhere back when I studied my early history, but I've long forgotten why the early church leaders chose a nature and pagan-based way of setting the date for Easter instead of just designating a date for it like they did with the date for Jesus' birth. The very name Easter comes from a pagan fertility goddess. And then you got these rabbits and eggs. It's not funny because when I was a kid, and I was being, as most of you know, I was raised in a very, very traditional Christian family and Christian church, and I could never quite put all that together on Easter. I would go to church and in the morning and I would hear about Jesus' death and resurrection, and then I would go home and eat chocolate rabbits and hunt for colored eggs. And when I would ask about that, the questions always kind of got shunted aside somewhere, like my parents didn't want to talk about it or something, you know, because we're talking about pagan fertility symbols here. And, well, I'll admit, I gave into a little bit of that today when I was doing my story with the kids. You know, I had a little branch there and I had the egg. I decided not to use a picture of a rabbit or a couple of rabbits because I just plain didn't want to go there. Anyway, I offer this, as I presume you know, not to belittle the Christian Easter or the Jewish Passover, but rather to point out that whatever particular names and practices are involved, what happens at this time of year is a universal, human, and earthly event. For our earliest human ancestors, it was the time when the earth called them back to life and hope, and I think we still get some sense of what they felt as we see the earthly resurrection of spring coming again. And so while I still find, as you probably noticed, some metaphorical meaning in the Christian story this season. Becoming a Unitarian Universalist has actually allowed me to find a wider appreciation for this holiday or holy day. And one of my colleagues in the Union Ministry, the Reverend Mark Harris, puts it very well when he noted, "We Unitarian Universalists celebrate the many resurrections of this season. We celebrate the glory to the earth when birds take wing and crocuses force their way through the crust of snow down to the arrival of spring. We celebrate the untold number of courageous individuals and groups who sacrifice their lives to liberate others from oppression and create a more just and loving world. We celebrate the ability of the human heart to overcome terrible personal tragedy or handicap and affirm once more the ability to love or excel where many others would have given up hope. Easter celebrates the times of witnessing, experiencing, and creating the resurrections of human life." And I think that's very well put. For an Easter moment, then, is a time when life calls us back. Back from a time of loss, or defeat, or from those deaths in life that will inevitably come our way. And there's a challenge that goes with that. For the Easter challenge is, are we ready to respond when that call comes? For it's true, you cannot rush a resurrection. If your life has been broken in some way, it doesn't quite work to pretend that everything is all well and healed if the process for that hasn't gone forward. We can't rush it. We have to wait for the earth to come back to life. And there are times when we have to wait for life in its fullness to come back to us. But when it does, when life calls us back, are we ready to respond? And this gets me to my favorite Easter story, which does not come from any kind of a biblical account. And it's not even about the reawakening earth, and it has no eggs or rabbits in it. But it does have a bear as its central character. And the name of the story is The 9x9 Foot Cage. Well, as most stories begin, once upon a time. When and where is not important. There was a bear who traveled with a circus. And he wasn't trained to do anything the way that the performing animals were. His only role was to sit or pace around in a 9x9 foot cage that would be placed beside the road near the entrance to the circus. This bear was like a living billboard or a broadside. The idea was that people would see him and then they'd know that the circus was a town and they'd go to the circus. And because he was more or less expendable, the bear was not especially well kept. His cage was seldom clean. He was fed what was ever left over after performing animals had been taken care of. In other words, he was a pretty disrespected bear. All he ever did, day in and day out, walk around the square, 9 feet in each direction. Well, as things turned out, this was not a particularly well-run circus, and eventually it went bankrupt. And all the equipment was sold off, the performers had to find new jobs, and the animals were either sold to the circuses or sent off to zoos. And since our bear had no value as a performer, he was shipped off to a zoo. And by some great stroke of fortune, it was one of these zoos that are built in such a way that allows animals a lot of freedom of movement in areas that resemble their natural habitat, while also being protected from the visitors to the zoo and the visitors from them. In other words, there were no cages. The bear was free, free to wander as he would within the wider confines of his surroundings. And yet, so this story goes, for the remainder of his life, the bear never ventured beyond an area, 9x9 square. He was afraid to break out of his old pen. This is not a story that requires a great deal of interpretation or explanation. The bars were gone. The stone, to use another metaphor, had been rolled away. But the bear still had to choose to act on the new possibilities that were before him. The only bars left were the ones in his mind and spirit, which proved to be as real as the ones that had been around him. was those bars of mind and spirit that he had to truly get rid of in order to know a resurrection. Of course, he didn't have unlimited freedom. But then, none of us do either. And yet, within the confines of our time-bound lives, we, like our bear, are given opportunities to know rebirth and renewal after those times when life has deeply wounded or diminished us. And this is the promise of the Easter season. While a personal God is not part of my personal theology, I do believe in a creative power that is at work, or can be at work, both within our lives and beyond them. I've even been known to call this creative power God on occasion. It's this creative power we each and all possess, I believe, that allows and enables us to keep saying yes in the face of the many no's we encounter. It is this creative power that calls us from our times of retreat and hiding back into re-engagement. When it comes to our earth, yes, we do indeed have to wait for a resurrection. We have to wait for the creative power to bring us the blessings of spring. When it comes to the rhythms of our lives, in all their great glory and in all their deep tragedy, we are ones who must be agents of resurrection. We are the ones who still have to respond when the bars of the Spirit have been lifted. We are the ones who have to do the shaping in order that we may fulfill the promises of our lives. I cited a reading by Reverend Mark Harris a little earlier. I'd like to return to it now as a way of closing these thoughts, continuing with what he wrote earlier. If we believe in a creative power which shatters the icy tomb of winter and the life with the life-giving miracle of spring, we have seen a resurrection. If we believe in a creative power which moves tents, and then tens of thousands of people cry out against injustice, enabling the downfall of hatred, then we have created a resurrection. If we believe in a creative power within each human breast, which allows us to break the bonds of personal pain and know the hope of new tomorrows, then we have experienced a resurrection. Such is the challenge and promise of living in this season of the year, and in all the seasons of our lives, that we can create and discover meaning until the end of our days. The theologian Sam Keen, author of To a Dancing God, makes an observation in that book about his father shortly after his father had passed away. Something that's long stayed with him. Writing of his father immediately after his death, Sam Keen said, "He died only at the end of his life." Can't think of a more worthy life goal. To die only at the end of one's life is to not be defeated by the various deaths in life that will come our way. It is to create and discover meaning with all the life that we're given for as long as we're given it. Well, I'll return to where I began. The last public appearance that the Reverend William Sloan Coffin made was at his former pulpit at New York City's Riverside Church, which he served for a number of years. He came back there in the fall of 2003. By that time, he had suffered a series of strokes. But he still had usable speech. He still had his old fire and wit as he spoke on the subject of patriotism and nationalism in the face of the Iraq War. Here's some of what he said. "Patriotism at the expense of another country is as wicked as racism at the expense of another race. Let us resolve to be patriots, always. Nationalists, never. Let us love our country, but let us pledge allegiance to the earth and the flora and the fauna and the human life it supports. Our planet with clean air, soil, and water, and with liberty and justice for all." Bill Coffin held up his vision for humanity and his hope and his love of life for as long as his life allowed him to do so. So with the lives that we have been given, may we also be bearers of hope and life, life abundant, for as long as we are permitted to do so, and thereby live until the end of our lives. On that note, I wish a very blessed and happy Easter to all of you. I invite you to join in our closing hymn, O Day of Light and Gladness.